like something.
That was a lively one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it, though?
I don't know.
What? Hey, let's do it again.
Okay.
How long was I out? Here we go.
Okay. Ready to see his favorite band play live. He's thought about it all week. He bought his ticket. He wore his band t-shirt. He went to the concert venue. He wasn't allowed inside the concert venue. He put away his band t-shirt. He threw away his ticket. And he thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. Beginning in September, you'll need a vaccination passport to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Envisioning Palestine on Parliament Hill and an event with Vote Palestine. I'd like to start us off tonight by acknowledging that I am joining from the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg and the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. This territory is part of the Two-Row Wampum Treaty. As a Palestinian, I want to recognize that presence here on Turtle Island is that of a settler and how I privilege from residing in this colonial state. If you haven't already, I invite everyone here to take a moment after this event, go to native-land.ca and learn more about the territory you are residing in. Colonialism is not something from the past. It is sadly still very present. I invite everyone to reflect on their positionality in Canada, to learn and unlearn, connect and listen to Indigenous voices, and to go beyond land acknowledgement and incorporate ways to challenge colonialism everywhere. Vote Palestine has four main organizing contributors: the Arab Canadian Lawyers Association, Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, Independent Jewish Voices, and the Palestinian Youth Movement, all of which you'll be hearing from tonight. Additionally, we are proud to have over 75 organizations on board, along with over 1,500 individual supporters. So without further ado, I will pass it on to Dania Majid from the Arab Canadian Lawyers Association, and she'll outline Vote Palestine for all of you who are joining us new here.
Hello, welcome. We're so happy to have so many of you here with us tonight. You know, we've been working together collectively as organizations individually or, with each other, you know, on issues around Palestine for a very long time. But we noticed something very pivotal happened this year, earlier in the spring, around the uprisings in, you know, in Palestine and across Palestine. And we saw an unprecedented mass mobilization and support from a cross-section of Canadians, something we've never seen before, engagement from sectors that hadn't engaged before. And we saw a lot of campaigns coming out, pushing on different issues at that time. And we also noticed that individuals were coming out and engaging their MPs directly to push back on their very weak responses to the oppressions, you know, experienced by Palestinians, and they were demanding actions. So as a result of, you know, this pushback, we started to see that some of positions from parties and from MPs themselves were starting to shift and soften a little bit. And some of them even went beyond their own parties to speak openly in support of Palestinian rights. And we also saw something happen that was also very pivotal, was the NDP membership, who had successfully pushed through the Palestine resolution at their convention against all odds. So, you know, we were really hopeful by these signs that we were seeing. So this campaign, the Vote Palestine campaign, is really meant to, you know, build on this grassroots momentum that we've witnessed and give both individuals and organizations tools that they can come on, endorse the Vote Palestine campaign, use the tools around questionnaires for candidates, questions, you know, voter questions for candidates, party surveys, and do that grassroots work in the ridings to let their candidates know that they want to vote for someone who respects Palestinian human rights. So please, you know, it's not too late. Share the campaign, endorse the campaign. If you have an organization, please sign on. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dania. Next up, we have our platform outline. So I'm so happy to introduce to you, from the Canadian for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, we have Michael Buchert. And from Independent Jewish Voices, we have Aaron Lakoff. And from Justice Peace Advocates, we have Karen Rodman. Hi, everybody.
Hello. Hey. Nice to be here.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. So I'll let you guys take it away. I'd love to let everybody know about our platform, and I'm sure they're all excited to hear it. Aaron, I'll start with you.
Sure. Okay, wonderful. Thanks so much for having me here. It's really exciting to be part of this event. My name is Aaron Lakoff. I'm the communications and media lead with Independent Jewish Voices Canada. One part of our platform that I'll speak to, you know, really touches on domestic issues rather than foreign policy. When we're talking a lot about foreign policy here, you know, but one of the things that unfortunately we hear a lot of the times when, you know, Palestine and Palestinian human rights are brought up is we hear it conflated with anti-Semitism. And, you know, just a minute ago, Daniel was speaking to the fact that this past spring, tens of thousands of Canadians, you know, from in cities coast to coast were coming out into the streets and beautiful, peaceful rallies to stand up for human rights. And unfortunately, you know, what we're seeing is in the media, a lot of the times people who are coming out to stand up for Palestine are getting smeared as anti-Semites. And it's a very concerted effort being pushed by Jewish establishment organizations and by pro-Israel groups in order to, you know, fight back or to counter this growing support for Palestinian liberation and Palestinian human rights. So one of the main tools, let's say, or even weapons, I think we could rightly say that they're using at their disposal these days, is a particular definition of anti-Semitism that's being put forward by the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, or the IHRA. So they have a working definition of anti-Semitism. And it's one of our platform points that we're asking candidates and parties to take a strong stance against this definition. We want candidates to fight anti-Semitism because we know that anti-Semitism is real. You know, especially in the Trump years in the US, we saw a huge rise of anti-Semitism in the States, and that hate trickled up across the border here. We know it's there, but there's a real danger in conflating anti-Semitism with legitimate criticism of Israel. And so this definition, and I'll keep my comments as brief as possible, the definition itself is quite mundane. In fact, we at IJV would even say it's rather toothless and kind of useless as a definition. It just says it's two sentences, and I'll read them right now. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or property, towards the Jewish community, institutions, and religious facilities. So not much of an issue with the definition itself. The real problem is with this appended list of examples of so-called anti-Semitism. So there's 11 examples, seven of which are not talking about Jews per se, but are talking about Israel. So this definition is much more concerned with protecting the state of Israel than it is about actually protecting Jews. So one of those definitions that I think is the most insidious is that it says that to call Israel a racist endeavor is anti-Semitism. And this is going to be extremely dangerous if it gets adopted as law or if it gets worked into legislation, because it will serve to silence Palestinian Canadians and really, you know, any Canadian that's standing up and that is saying, yes, Israel should rightly be called a racist endeavor. So we're really hoping that, you know, in this election and that beyond the election, that parties and candidates take a really, really strong stance in support of just protecting freedom of expression around Palestine. It doesn't mean that they need to support, you know, every single thing that's being said in these movements, but it just means at a base level, they need to respect the right of Canadians to engage in boycott, divestments, and sanctions, and to criticize Israel without being smeared as anti-Semites.
Aaron, thank you so much for shedding light on all those very important points. Karen, take it away.
Great. Thank you so much. And so much my pleasure to be able to join Karen Rodman from Just Peace Advocates. And I'm going to talk just briefly about two of the platforms in Vote Palestine that we with other partners have been involved in. The Vote Palestine platform includes a call for an end to Israeli military recruitment in Canada by enforcing Canada's own Foreign Enlistment Act. The Canadian Foreign Enlistment Act itself states that any person who is within Canada who recruits or otherwise induces any person or body of persons to enlist or to accept any commission or engagement in the armed forces of any foreign state or other armed forces operating in that state is guilty of an offense. And so it was on that basis that just about a year ago, in October 2020, a legal complaint was provided by Just Peace Advocates and a number of other organizations to Justice Minister Lametti to undertake, and calling him to undertake an investigation on illegal foreign recruiting for the Israeli military happening within Canada. After front page coverage in the Le Devoir in Montreal, Minister Lametti indicated the RCMP would undertake an investigation that is continuing and ongoing. Over the last year, thousands of letters have been sent to elected officials and to the RCMP. And most recently, almost 8,000 Canadians signed a parliamentary petition that was sponsored by NDP member Matthew Green in this regard, asking Canada to uphold its own domestic law. So this is an issue that's well known to elected officials, but also very much in mainstream Canadian consciousness as well. And so that is one of the reasons that we felt this was really important to put into the platform. In regard to Vote Palestine, the other platform that I will speak to is the call to suspend all bilateral trade of weapons and military services with Israel until it complies with international law. And over 50 organizations have recently joined in a call to end all trade in weapons with Israel through a two-way arms embargo and ending military security cooperation with Israel, as well as canceling the procurement that's underway for armed surveillance drones and other such actions that are underway within the Canadian government. Earlier this year, the Canadian Labour Congress also called for promoting divestment from Israeli military and security companies and on calling Canada to halt arms sales to Israel, among other measures. And the NDP itself passed a resolution in April that Dania was mentioning as we started. And part of that resolution supports suspending the bilateral trade of all arms and related materials with the state of Israel until Palestinian rights are upheld. So both of these platforms speak very much to calls that Canadians have been making to the Canadian government over the last number of months, and which have had active support from a number of elected officials in the last session of government, from several parties, as well as from a broad base of support from Canadian civil society. So these are platforms that we are pleased to be bringing to the attention of the candidates that are running for parties across the country.
Karen, thank you so much for your contribution and highlighting those platform points. Michael?
Thanks, Dima. My name is Michael Buechert with Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. One of the platform points that we have been pushing with Vote Palestine is to cancel the drone contract with the Israeli company Elbit Systems. So this is a contract that we signed less than a year ago, $36 million for a drone from one of Israel's largest weapons company. You know, this is a drone that is supposed to be used not for military purposes, but for surveillance in the Arctic, for environmental monitoring reasons. Yet we're buying it from a company that is directly involved in the occupation of Palestine and in the daily violence against the Palestinian people. This is actually a civilian version of the exact same drones that are being used in Gaza earlier this year, as well as in 2014, to use airstrikes against the civilian population in contradicting international law and contributing to terrible human rights abuses. This is what our Canadian taxpayer dollars are going to support. The bottom line, the profits of this company, is absolutely unacceptable. So we are calling on Minister Omar Al-Ghabra, the transport minister, to cancel this drone contract immediately so that we are not spending our money on these death machines. We're also calling for a vote, or for Canada to start voting in support of all UN resolutions which aim to uphold Palestinian human rights. During the Stephen Harper administration, we saw a pretty drastic shift in the way that Canada was voting at the UN. It started to vote universally against motions in support of Palestinian rights, siding with only Israel, the United States, and a very small handful of countries, really isolating ourselves on the international stage. There's about maybe 16 resolutions that come up every single year. They're on a number of things related to condemning Israeli settlements, to supporting Palestinian refugees. And Canada has been voting since Harper on against almost all of these resolutions. So this changed a little bit a couple of years ago when Canada started to vote in favor of a single motion in favor of Palestinian self-determination, but voting against all of these other motions, which simply affirm Palestinian rights and international law. It's a total disgrace and an embarrassment that reflects very badly on the Canadian government internationally. So we're calling for an end to this. There's a lot of other platform points that we could talk about. There's a lot of things that we're pushing officials to take on, but I think we'll leave it there for now. And you can check out the full platform at votepalestine.ca. So thank you so much, everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you, Karen, Aaron, and Michael. Next, we're going to highlight some calls to action. So all of you, all of our viewers, there's important actions that need to be, you know, executed in order for this campaign to really reach the heights that it's capable of. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dalia Aide from the Palestinian Youth Movement, and she's going to outline some calls to action that you can all get involved with.
Shukran Dima, masa al-khair, everyone. So you've heard Karen, Michael, and Aaron all outline the platform of Vote Palestine and why this campaign is so important. So I'm going to walk you through some key action items that you can take. So the first is you can send the questionnaire to your candidates in your local ridings, or you can tag them and ask them to pledge to vote Palestine. You can also share our campaign with your networks and organizations, and you can ask them to endorse the campaign. If you meet your local candidate or you meet with their volunteers, you can ask them to answer the four key questions that we have outlined on our website and on our social media. You can share our posts on social media. And finally, you can donate to help us cover our costs. I won't, go into much more detail about what you can do, but you can find out more about that on the Vote Palestine website. And I'll hand it off back to you, Dima.
Shukran, Dalia. Next up, we have Reflections of Palestine in Politics. I'm going to have Dania Majid from the Arab Canadian Lawyers Association introduce Dr. Nadia Abu Zahra and Dr. Atif.
Thanks so much, Dima. We're really so fortunate to have two really great minds with us tonight to talk politics on Palestine. First, we have Dr. Atif Kurbasi, who is a professor emeritus of economics at McMaster University, and he is also president of Econometric Research Limited. And the bio goes much, much longer, but this is the short version of his accomplishments. And we also have Dr. Nadia Abu Zahra, who is an associate professor in the School of International Development and Global Studies at the University of Ottawa, and is a member of the Human Rights Research and Education Center. So welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So we've heard a lot of information, touching upon Palestinian politics from our coordinating partners and from BSAN as a candidate. Any first impressions, from the commentaries we've received so far that kind of struck you about, Canada's role in Palestine and also the experiences of a first time candidate who happens to be Palestinian?
Well, let me begin by saying that all we're really doing here, all what our candidate is asking for, is for political parties and for our candidates and for the voters to respect and uphold Canadian values. We're asking for two very simple things. First, to protect, promote the human rights of the Palestinians, their ability to move freely, their ability to exercise their inalienable right to govern their destiny, their ability to keep their homes, their ability to protect their families. And at the same time, we're only asking that Canada works, promotes, protects, and implement international law. I mean, how could you be more Canadian than being for human rights, especially of people who have been oppressed, they're under occupation, an illegal occupation, and asking for the simple application of international law and international humanitarian law. Palestinian kids, hundreds of them are in prison. Homes are being demolished. People are evicted from homes that they've owned and lived in for decades. The Palestinians are unable to benefit from their natural resources. They're being expropriated, whether it's land, water, their olive trees are being plucked. So what we're asking, very simple, and we're asking the Canadian voters and the Canadian candidates to uphold Canadian values, to respect Canadian principles that they apply every place in the world and ask others to adhere to. Why not the Palestinian? Why should the Palestinian be different than anybody else?
Mm-hmm. Nadia, did you have any thoughts?
Well, I think two things. I think that Professor Kobursi has talked very much about the platforms of political parties to represent all people who are voting in these and all elections within Canada. And so I think that's one aspect, which is the platforms of the political parties. But the other aspect, we're asking for simple representation. We're asking for one Palestinian to be a member of parliament. It's very important to feel that we can be a part of politics. We can be a part of collective decision making that represents, you know, our societies here. So that's one. I think the other thing is that, you know, understanding Palestinian roots is also understanding our unrootedness on Turtle Island, describing the responsibility to think decolonially and to think instead, you know, on whose territory are we? And without earlier communicating with the people whose territory that is. So for instance, where I sit at the moment is unceded Algonquin territory. And so, you know, it's if I were to be thinking politically in this region, I would be thinking about being a settler or apolitically, you know, just thinking as someone who lives and breathes and walks on this place. I think it's really crucial. First and foremost, we have to recognize our situation as settlers here before we can talk about, you know, policy toward other Indigenous nations elsewhere. We have to first focus on decoloniality here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite often surprised our prime minister, other party leaders and candidates who always say we share values with Israel. I always like to ask, what values do you share with them? I mean, do you share with them the fact that you're a colonial or have acted as a colonial power, that you have suppressed the indigenous people, that you have violated international law, that you have really been oblivious to your responsibility under the United Nations Charter to protect the rights of people, the human rights, the basic human rights? Look, I mean, Canada violates international law. It's trades with the settlements. This is in its political stature. Canada has rejected the occupation of Palestinian land, whether it's Jerusalem, other places, or has treated them and declared them as illegal occupation. So how could you be illegal occupation and you bestow, you extend the free trade agreement with Israel to cover products coming from this settlement? The Europeans have been very blunt about it, very clear, and have declared that any product that comes from these settlements does not fall within the agreement with Israel and the European Union, that this is an illegal trade, this is an illegal transaction, and people challenged it, and the European Court reviewed it and came on the side that this is an illegal activity, illegal transaction. Any dealing with the settlements literally is an illegal and in contravention of international law.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that, you know, in our conversations amongst ourselves, but also the many, I mean, we have probably, like, I think at this point, like 1,500 plus endorsers who've signed the pledge and have written comments to us about why they want to see, you know, their candidates speak up. You know, everyone seems to understand these issues, but politicians do not. So where's the disconnect? You know, we see the mass mobilization, we've seen the polls, you know, expressing support for Palestinian human rights. And it's not just Arabs, right? We're not talking about a small demographic, we're talking a cross section. We've seen the mass uprising, as I mentioned, in the spring. But yet we see very little action from government officials. And you know, this is one thing that I think all of us struggle with is, you know, how many more petitions can you, like, you know, how can you receive 100,000 plus signatories to petitions, but still Palestine, you know, no discussion on foreign policy, even in the debates, the only question on Palestine was posed to Anna May Paul, and it was in regards to the implosion of her, you know, of her party on that question. But you know, we see the Conservative Party actually, you know, adopt a Donald Trump policy to say, you know, in light of all we know about Donald Trump and his policies, no, I'm still going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. And that's what he's really come out, you know, in regards to on Palestine. So where is the disconnect? Why aren't politicians seeing, you know, this movement grow and grow, but and not react to it in a way that, you know, reflects the growth?
If I may, this may sound very predictable, but I have to think of the education that I received as I was growing up, you know, and I really do believe that to fully understand the operation of political parties and their responses to an electorate, you know, because I do see if we change as an electorate, if what the people want and say changes eventually, perhaps not immediately, but I do think that political parties must have some sensitivity to what the people want. And I hear what you're saying, that the people have been very, you know, clear. There have been, you know, mass mobilizations all over in small towns, in large cities. We've seen it for many years, you know, at least 20 years, we've been witnessing people literally in the streets trying to raise their voices and to say, this is what we want. And we have seen the non-response from political parties. However, we've also seen that political parties can respond to public opinion from time to time. And therefore, I return to, again, the kinds of education that we're receiving growing up. And so we're receiving an education until recently that did not acknowledge colonialism that is ongoing right here, right now. And so therefore, it becomes extremely difficult to fully understand colonialism happening elsewhere, ongoing right here, right now. And to understand, unfortunately, that settler Canadians not only play a part in colonialism here, but also internationally. And so I do think it comes down to, frankly, the songs we sing in our schools, the children's games that we play. And I'd love to see those change. I would love to see far more understanding of not only First Nations culture, but, you know, rights and the concept of what is colonialism and how does it continue to take place? Because in the understanding that a lot of kids had when I was growing up, it was over. Colonialism was over here and it was irreversible. And there was no notion of an Indigenous future here, let alone an Indigenous future internationally, in Iraq, in Palestine, in Kashmir, and elsewhere. And so I'm hoping that in education it will change, and therefore the electorate will change, and therefore one day political party platforms will come to understand the true path to justice and to well-being.
Yeah, there are multiple disconnects. There is not only one disconnect. One disconnect is with our values. Our values say that we respect human rights, international law, and even at one time we were arguing that international law should really be part of Canadian jurisprudence. There is disconnect with the rank and file of many parties who have demonstrated, voted, voiced their concerns, have asked and demanded that there would be a more responsive and responsible treatment of political issues involving the Palestinians. There is a disconnect with our rhetoric. I mean, if you look at the website of the External Affairs, they are very clear about Israel being in violation of international law, about Israel is an illegal occupation, that Israel is trespassing the rights of the Palestinians. But how on earth you could speak on one place in one way and then speak completely the opposite way when you become into the real politique of things. And I'm very happy with what Dr. Nadia was talking about, is that we're not only talking about politics, we're talking about values, about education, about the way we conceive ourselves, the way we project ourselves, our hypocrisy and our truthfulness to ourselves and to our candidates and our voters and our leaders. This is a time where we really need to reconnect and reconnect in a way that preserves the integrity of the political process and the very basis of what democracy is all about. If people want something and have voiced their position on it, this is an implicit and I don't want to be, you know, stepping on your toes, Dania, as a lawyer, but there is indeed here a contract between the voter and the representative, and that any dismissal or disregard of this implicit contract is a major violation of the democratic process.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at this, you know, sort of big picture, because I know sometimes it's very hard, you focus on the moment and the time and you know, you miss a lot. You know, so if we were to zoom out a little bit and sort of look at the trajectory of Palestine in politics, where's the trajectory going? Is this a moment of optimism where we are, you know, we can point towards things where we are starting to see some of the fruits of our labor? Or, you know, is it a time of concern where we're also seeing a lot of, you know, frightening things happening, you know, from the environment? Like, you know, we seem to be going backwards on many other issues that are also important to us. So, you know, in your view, and I know it's a little bit crystal balling it, but, you know, kind of taking a bigger view, where are we on the trajectory on Palestine and politics in Canada?
I think we have made a major step forward, which is that we have finally established publicly, internationally, and particularly among the electorate in Canada and Turtle Island. I think we now understand that people who are advocating for justice in Palestine are advocating merely for justice. And so the word pro-Palestine, pro-Palestinian, we have finally been allowed to see that word drop from discourse and to see pro-justice, pro-equality, pro-human rights, pro-fairness, pro-indigeneity, and to better understand that this is actually not an issue for people who are born to certain parents or born in certain locations. This is an issue for everyone who cares about freedom. Basic freedom.
Freedom.
Because if someone's freedom is restricted in these ways with certain technologies, it's only a matter of time before those practices and those technologies are applied to another people and another people and another people. And we are witnessing that. And it is extremely frightening to understand how private security companies translate from one location to another, seamlessly changing their targets. And in the end, everyone is going to be affected by these negative forms of interaction between human beings. We need to stop them when they start. We need to identify them anywhere in the world and to say, no, this is no way to treat a human being. And I don't care if that human being is living in Kashmir, or if that human being is living in Palestine, if that human being is living in Venezuela, Guatemala, wherever that person happens to be, we need to stand up and say that is not a way to treat a human being. And I'll repeat myself, that is not a way to treat a human being in Turtle Island. You know, we witness and we are complicit to injustices that are happening here. And so we must stand up for injustice everywhere. And you know, to paraphrase the greats, injustice everywhere is really the issue. And I think that's why we've moved forward. Finally, this, you know, we are not being branded as being tribalistic, as being narrow, as being focused on something that does not affect what's happening here. And there is a growth in understanding. So we're seeing a Black Lives Matter protest talking about Palestine, and we are seeing a Palestine protest talking about Black Lives Matter. Okay. And that's just one quick example of the incredible solidarity that we are now beginning to see across movements. It's not an accident and it can never be assumed, but it is slowly cultivated and built through healthy relations, through relations of equality, of horizontality. And that is the kind of thing we really need to see more of, whether it's in the parliament or outside of the parliament. That's the kind of thing we can start on a micro scale, but also with an understanding of it affecting the way in which we envision the place that we call home.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. Last year, things have happened in a way I have not really seen it before. The way people have voted with their feet, and have come and spoke openly and in large numbers. One thing that I agree totally with Nadia is that human rights are indivisible. You cannot be free in Canada when other human beings are not free, and especially affected by policies and practices and positions and votes that you are committing in Canada. So in some sense here, and Mandela was absolutely right, that I cannot feel to be totally free in South Africa and that I have escaped apartheid as long as the Palestinians remain under a regime of apartheid. And that this indivisibility of human rights, the indivisibility of human dignity, the indivisibility of our responsibility to protect human rights wherever they are, as if they are owned, I think this is absolutely a new discourse, and it's becoming to be very powerful, and we can count on it. And then count also the fact that several human rights organizations, from the Human Rights Watch and others, who have for the first time had the guts and had the moral fortitude to stand up and say, Israel is practicing apartheid. It's a regime that has completely treated the Palestinians as inferior and has subjugated them and have robbed them of their rights and trying to rob them of their dignity, but have failed. But this is a point where we assert our dignity by asserting the dignity of the Palestinians.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one thing that, you know, when we reflect on this moment of time too, is how different movements of justice and liberation have, you know, relied on one another, supported one another, and created paths for one another. And, you know, and I think critical to that is, you know, the removing of fear of speaking out on one's taboo issues. And, you know, when we can speak about gay rights, or we can speak about Indigenous rights or Black rights, and we remove the taboo from that, you know, from the, you know, those topics, other topics, we are also able to say Free Palestine without fear, and we need to continue to do so. So my final question to you both, and again, it requires you to maybe pull out that crystal ball again, is what happens on September 21st? You know, do you have any predictions? But you don't have to give them to us if you don't or you do. But what you know, we spend a lot of time as Canadians focused on vote election day. And we think democracy is an act of putting a ballot in a box, when in fact, the real work and a real democracy is about what happens the day after the election and in between elections. So, you know, we talked about disconnect and a lot of points of disconnect. You know, what should be our, you know, what should those who endorse the Vote Palestine campaign, the groups who work on this issue, you know, what should the focus be, or where what are the points of reconnection that we need to focus on, you know, come September 21st to make sure that Palestine gets back on the agenda in a principled manner?
If you want me to start, I'm an economist, and I'm not afraid to make predictions. We predicted 9 of the last 5 recessions. So our record is not great, but I definitely see that they're going to be a minority government, and it may not be on the 21st. It could be the 23rd, 24th, given the way we're going. But the story is very important here. And what I would like to emphasize here, and it's very crucial, that what we are working for, what we should be working for, what we should continue to work for, is not just a one single shot for one election. This is a platform. This is a commitment, a moral commitment, and should remain a guiding principle and should motivate us to continue to struggle, to educate our fellow citizens, to voice our concerns, and to speak for justice, not to remain indifferent or to mute our voices or accept those who try to mute our voices. I mean, those who are really trying to conflate our criticism of Israel and its trespasses and its infractions of international law as anti-Semitism is itself a very vicious and malicious way. And we should stand up and remain vocal and loud in our condemnation of injustice, wherever it is, and that we are motivated here to continue our work and our efforts. And that is really the least we can do as human beings and as true Canadians, because Canadians have a responsibility as they speak and project themselves as people for peace and justice, is to remain continuously committed and to be vocal in these things.
Well, I would say what matters for me, honestly, is every person watching this. Every person who enters with a particular point of view and walks out hopefully with a different one, or, you know, because it's always good to learn something new. Always, you know, and I think it's actually good to have lots of different perspectives and lots of different viewpoints. I think it's good to have that diversity and to always be learning from one another. So I think what really, really matters is not for me so much, you know, which government will be in power for the next few years or which interesting conglomeration will be in power for the next few years, but instead thinking much, much more long-term and thinking, how is our society or our societies, how are we going to really think of our futures and think perhaps of a future that is far more, you know, for lack of any other word, far more decolonial, you know, that I want to think beyond, you know, a government that's allied with a military industrial complex that engages in, you know, destructive practices to our earth, to our relations. I want to think beyond that, you know. I know that in the short term, that is what we have, no matter which party is going to be in leadership. But I think in the longer term, we can all work to change that, you know, just as we hope that settlers in Palestine will wish for justice fervently. I hope that settlers like me in Turtle Island will wish for justice fervently here and everywhere.
Well, thank you so much, you know, to the both of you for those insights and commentaries on you know, contemporary Canadian politics and where we go from here after the election. I'm sure this conversation will continue, and I think we need to have a lot more to make sure that, you know, we can figure out, you know, how to best mobilize and put pressure on, you know, the elected officials who do make it to Parliament Hill to you know, keep their pledges, if they've made pledges, and if they claim to support human rights, then hold them accountable to that claim. So, you know, we definitely encourage those watching, you know, to keep in touch, you know, follow the partners, the coordinating partners for the work to come, because you really, the real work happens always after the election. So thank you very much. And then, yeah, we're going to keep you on, and I'm going to add everybody else on, and Dima will lead the Q&A if we have any questions from the audience.
Thank you so much for that really engaging conversation. There's a lot of great takeaways. From what Professor Nadia and Atif communicated, it sounds like there is a need to have solidarity with other marginalized communities when we organize. What advice do each of you have on how that can best be done?
The whole argument, our discourse here, is rooted into the indivisibility of human dignity and human rights and freedom. And it's about respect of the law. I mean, we're not a one single issue here. Whenever we talk about Palestinian human rights, we're talking about human rights. And whether this applies to Palestinians, our natives, or any group, that commonality is fundamental. And for us, there is no division here. And this calls for definitely a solidarity, a strong and not just rhetorical, but really meaningful and existential collective struggle towards the establishment of and the protection of human rights and respect of human beings. One thing that is also quite evident here is that the discourse that Nadia was talking about is anti-colonial. And in this respect, the struggle of the Palestinian is the struggle of every group, every suppressed, every oppressed. It's basically a yearning for freedom and for the full rights of people, regardless of who they are, what ethnicity, what orientation. It's that collective justice that is indiscriminate in its discourse, that everybody is equal.
Absolutely, absolutely. Professor Nadia?
I want to draw attention to some of the less palatable parallels. And I want to talk about impunity. And, you know, it was reported in the Los Angeles Times just, you know, on Friday that a 15-year-old boy who had gone out with his friends was taken by settlers and hung from a tree, beaten with clubs, and the soles of his feet were burnt. Yeah. And this kind of thing actually happens often. You know, I can tell you far more, you know, this boy survived. This 15-year-old boy survived. I can tell you the stories of ones who did not survive. And many of them are only made public because they have a tie to some other place and so on. But the, you know, this sort of thing happens with impunity on a regular basis. And it happens here too. You know, we know about the Bushi case. You know, we know that he was shot. We know the words that were said at the time. And we know what happened to the perpetrators. And so this level of impunity that is a frightening disrespect for human life and for all their relations is something that cannot continue. And so somehow we have to build, there is no choice but to build solidarity. And there is no choice but to turn away from this path that is leading to these kinds of acts happening more and more frequently. You know, we cannot let them continue and for humanity to come to this.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you so much. So we're going to take one more question. How do we break free from the two-state solution narrative in conversation in Canadian politics? So I'm actually going to open this up to the floor, and I'd love to hear from actually everybody's you know, perspectives on you know, how we do that.
I'd like to ask, what two states are we talking about?
fair question. Bisan, do you have anything to add?
I mean, there is one state, maybe a quarter of a state, and it's Swiss cheese, and the occupier is still in control of the resources, of the livelihood, of the lives of the people. And any talk about a two state, let's begin with Canada. For the first time, have a chance. They were asked, recognize the Palestinian representative here as representative of Palestine. They continue to talk about Palestinians, but they never accept the word Palestine. How could you possibly talk about two states when you refrain and you do not accept and you do not recognize Palestine as a state?
I feel like for me, I don't want to preclude what the end of look like, what peace looks like. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't think we know any better than anybody. If we come to the table with open hearts and we try and figure out how does everybody live freely with full rights, whatever that solution is, it could be 12 states. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't need to say what is and isn't before we even come to the table as partners for peace, for justice, for accountability and transparency. Those are the things that will bring us to a solution that I don't think we in this state right now have very much information about.
The shift from the two-state solution narrative is a shift to a conversation about justice. And if we are talking about justice for all Indigenous peoples, it's clear what that will look like here on Turtle Island, in Palestine, and elsewhere in the world. So really, we need to shift our narratives to talk about not just peace, but peace and justice. So the marginalized communities and peoples of the world are getting what is rightfully theirs, which is living their lives with basic human dignity, which is all anyone is asking for here, is justice. Thank you.
Thank you so much for everybody's time tonight. We really appreciate every single one of you that took time out of your schedules to be here with us and have this really important conversation. I just want to reiterate, we've had just over 27 candidates from 3 different parties pledged to our platform since the kickoff of the campaign trail. We encourage any candidates watching with us today, here with us today, that we want to hear from you. Please visit our website. You can see it on the screen for the full candidate questionnaire. Additionally, as a voter, if the candidate in your riding is not on our pledge list, please visit our website and ensure that you email them the questionnaire. We'd like to hear from all candidates. Please consider the action items we heard from Bisan Zarbi on how you can all support the candidates that pledge to advocate for Palestinian human rights on Parliament Hill this election. And thank you all to all our contributing members, our guests, and our audience for being with us tonight. Good night. A pronto. Tzaun ala khair.
Tzaun ala khair.
Is there a place? Is there a place? Is there a place? Is there a place where we can be more than thunderclaps and hashtags? A place where we are human and our fears not Twitter storms, our flesh not dissected in comment sections. Is there a place? Is there a place where we can be more? More than thunderclaps and hashtags? A place where we are human and our fears not Twitter storms, our flesh not dissected in comment sections. Is there a place? Is there a place where we can hold each other in sorrow and silence in defiance, in sorrow and silence in defiance before you make a picture funeral to share widely another name fallen? Place. Is there a place? Is there a place where the headlines don't hate us or assume that we mysteriously die, just fall, and are never killed intentionally by soldiers taking orders intentionally, by snipers taking aim intentionally, by companies making war intentional? Is there a place where the headlines don't hate us? Is there a place where the headlines don't hate us? And our life, like our laughter, is intentional. Is there a place? Is there a place I don't have to justify how our lives are also sacred? Our lives also matter, and we also love our children. Is there a place where the breaking news, like breaking waves, doesn't just bring more bodies from the Mediterranean? Is there a place? Is there a place? Is there a place where we are more than horror stories and numbers etched on helmets? Stars for generals who calculate the calories to the brink of life. Is there a place? Is there a place? Is there a place? Is there a place? Nothing extraordinary, nothing magical about its oranges, nothing too blue about its skies, just a place where we can be, just a place where we can sit under a tree, just a place where we can be, where we can be, where we can be.
So
So that's it for us for today. You're listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free Palestine.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Step out, get some air now, let your edge out. To some ice, but you'll be heavy in my mind. Can you get the heck out? I need rest now, got me bummed out. You, baby. I've been on my empty mind, shit. I should've keep from losing the best in me. I worry that I wasted the best in me. It's just urgent. Tryna make sense of a little change. Got me a war in my mind. Gotta let go away and keep what's holding me. To the right, but I will pick up and find.